Thanks so much for joining us. You are listening to a celebration of the life and music of David Sanborn on WBGO. My name is Pat Prescott, and joining me for this special event is our guest, Marcus Miller. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, Pat, how are you doing?
Doing great. You know, Marcus was a dear friend and a longtime collaborator of David Sanborn, and we're going to share with you some of the music that they created together. We're going to hear from others who have worked very closely with David, also members of his family and friends. This is a different kind of tribute, Marcus, because David really touched the lives of so very many people.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I met him. Ooh, I tell people I still had braces on my teeth when I met David Sanborn. We were, Pat, we were both in the Saturday Night Live band together back, let's put it this way. It was when Eddie Murphy first appeared on Saturday Night Live. So we're talking like the maybe 1979, 1980. Anyway, Dave and I got to know each other, and David invited me to play in his band. And, you know, so when we weren't doing Saturday Night Live, we'd be on the road opening for Al Jarreau. This is when Al Jarreau had those big pop hits like We're In This Love Together, and those kind of tunes. And we were the opening band, and people, I just remember people being blown away by this little guy with the saxophone just blowing the doors out of the halls. You know, the thing about Dave that was really interesting, he really got attached to the saxophone early. You know, as a lot of people know, you know, he had polio as a child and spent a good amount of time in the hospital. This is back in the 40s. And once he got past the polio, that fight with polio, and he didn't really ever get over it. But once he dealt with the initial polio quarantine, put it that way, the doctor suggested maybe he get a saxophone to help him with his lungs, which were undeveloped as a child. So his mom bought him a saxophone. And first of all, that already kind of distinguishes David from other saxophone players because, you know, not every saxophone player took to the saxophone to save their life. You know what I mean? So he always had a really, really special relationship with his horn. Anyway, his dad took him to a Ray Charles concert, which was held at the old St. Louis Hawks basketball arena. The St. Louis Hawks don't exist anymore. I think they're the Atlanta Hawks now. But anyway, Dave and his dad were walking around the arena just listening to the music, and then the power went out. And the only instruments that you could hear were the acoustic instruments. And the loudest instrument was Hank Crawford on his saxophone. And Dave said he heard that sound, and he decided right then and there that that's what he wanted to do. And he told his dad, that's what I wanted to do. So he came to his instrument really in a very, very organic way. And then he got super turned on by hearing one of the greats, Hank Crawford, who was as soulful on his saxophone as Ray Charles was with his voice. So I think that really, really shaped David's sound and his concept of playing the saxophone.
Michael Bourne and David Sanborn had two big things in common. They both grew up in St. Louis, and they both had a deep appreciation for all things music. In this excerpt, Bourne gets David to talk about his time in the Paul Butterfield Blues Band and his first recorded sax solo.
I wanted to talk about this Butterfield Blues Band because this is the first band, that's the first blues record I ever bought, was the first one.
The very first one, born in Chicago.
And all that. Right. And I bought it because Sam Lay was a drummer and he had gold shoes.
Yeah.
And I was a drummer.
It was very impressive.
Yeah. And those gold shoes. I sang Mojo with a rock band, and he sang Mojo.
And Sam, the way he played on the crown of the cymbal like that.
Yeah. But you came into the Butterfield Band. And
right when Bloomfield left, he split to form the Electric Flag. And Butterfield hired horn players, and that was it for me.
And here's your first solo, right?
Yeah, in My Own Dream is In My Own Dream and Last Hope's Gone. I think In My Own Dream was the first one.
On the Soprano.
On the Soprano. Yeah, I'd gotten it 2 days earlier, and it got stolen a day or so later.
And did you? And you never played the Soprano again?
Well, very rarely. I played it very rarely, but that particular Soprano was a real special, kind of an old Busher.
And who did the arrangements on this?
We kind of worked them up together. I don't remember. I don't think anybody did it. Per se, somebody, either Dinwiddie or Keith Johnson did the horn chart, did the horn arrangement, the, you know, little background stuff.
But here's David Sanborn, way back when. How old were you?
21.
And David Sanborn solo.
That's right.
Yeah. On Jazz 88. That's from the Elektra Years collection. And your first solo with them.
Yeah.
Was that your first solo ever? Did I ask you that?
You know, I might have played on the record before that, but I don't remember. That's the first one I remember playing. You know.
Come a long way, kiddo.
Pat Raines has been David's manager for virtually his entire career. Here, Pat recalls how he came to manage David. And by the way, the Al he's referring to is Al Jarreau, another Raines client.
What happened is Al and Dave got signed at the same time. Dave was East Coast, Al was West Coast. And not probably as much today as back in those days, but back in those days, there was still pretty much a competitive thing happening between the New York Cats and the LA Cats. New York Cats thought the LA Cats were wimpy and, you know, and the LA Cats thought the New York guys were too uptight. Anyhow, they got signed at the same time. We were in a lot of promotional activity that we ended up doing together because Warner Brothers wisely was trying to maximize what they could do. So, you know, I ran into Dave a number of times in those situations, and we packaged Al's band with Dave's band. And we did, you know, Paul's Mall up in Boston and the Bottom Line in New York. And so we were, you know, we saw each other from time to time, and we kind of watched each other's career grow or not. And I think at the end of the day, it wasn't working for Dave the way he thought it should be. And one day, actually, it was at a Rickie Lee Jones concert that I happened to be at, that Dave was there. And he came up to me and hey, how you doing? What's going on? And bottom line to this, he asked me if I'd be interested in managing him. And, you know, I went home and I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. Let me go home and think about it. And he said, and don't worry. I mean, I'm sober. I'm straight. No, it's not a problem. So I went home and I listened to him all weekend, you know, on my stereo. And the thing that struck me about Dave's sound compared to everybody else is he had that thing, that distinctive thing that a great vocalist has. And when you hear those first four notes, you know who that is. And Dave's horn is exactly that thing.
Two of Sanborn's earliest collaborators were Michael and Randy Brecker. In 1975, the first Brecker Brothers album and the first David Sanborn album were released. And Randy Brecker was there for both.
They came relatively close together, and the still at that time, he wasn't really, even for his own first record, I think he wasn't that career oriented. But for the Brecker Brothers record, everything just kind of went as clockwork. So we had rehearsed that record quite a bit, off and on for several weeks. And you know, Sanborn was into playing the music and go making the rehearsals. That's really all I can think of. And he always sounded great. But on the first record, he was just easy to get along with and just did everything and played great, played the parts. I think he had Mike and Sanborn had a lot of mutual respect going, so they always tried to do their best.
Marcus, you and David had such a great working relationship. But David, I guess throughout his career, you could say was somebody who played well with others. So what was it about David, Marcus, that made him so great to collaborate with?
Well, a lot of singers love to collaborate with Sam Bourne, have him, you know, add his thing to their music because he played in such a vocal way. You know, he really tried to make his saxophone sing and he was really successful at it. So you would hear him on a lot of people's records, you know, like pop records where the singer sings a verse, chorus, another verse, another chorus. And then there's an 8-bar instrumental before the last chorus. That was like a standard form of pop music. And Dave was a specialist at those middle 8 bars. I'm talking about James Taylor. I'm talking about the Eagles. I'm talking about Carly Simon. He was just that perfect guy to keep the energy going of the song while the singer took a little 8-bar break and really doing a memorable segue back into the last chorus. And that was his specialty, man. I mean, people would fly him to Europe. They would fly him. David Bowie had him join his band because he was just so good at doing that. So, yes, he absolutely played well with others.
Yeah, you mentioned Carly Simon, and David tells a great story about his work on that record and that solo that you alluded to in a conversation with noted author James McBride.
I've had a question I wanted to ask you for a long time, and it has to do with a solo you did on, I think it's not Anticipate. Oh, I had this in my mind. It was a solo you did on a...
You Belong to Me.
Yes.
Carly Simon.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
You know, it's so funny that you asked me that. I mean, like there's so many musicians, they say, man, that solo that you played on that tune, it would really affected me. And I'm going, damn. And from the unlikeliest of places, Branford Marsalis said that to me. You know, he said that solo. It's like, wow. And I'm going, what? You know, because, you know, you do this stuff and you do it and forget about it, kind of.
Yeah, you know? But you play with such abandon. I just want to give the producer, whoever the producer was.
Arif Mardin.
Oh, well, there it is. I mean, because he said in the control room, he said, if you hit that stop button, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, right.
Just let him play.
Yeah.
Don't move. Don't move, because it's a killing solo, man. It's one for the ages, really.
You did not to me. Tell you a fool. You did not to me. Tell her she don't even know you.
Carly Simon, with help from David Sanborn. You Belong to Me. You know, there was a time when David's sax work could be heard all over pop and rock hits. Here's a montage of some of those memorable solos.
Whoa, yeah.
I want the Gaga.
the first time that you actually took over a project that you were working with Sam Bourne on? I know you produced a number of his records. What was the first experience? Tell us about that.
Well, I was in Dave's band. We were opening for Al Jarreau, along with Buddy Williams and Hiram Bullock and Don Grolnick. And I started handing Dave my songs that I was had been writing. I was working on songs, maybe thinking about doing my own album. Well, I gave him the cassette tape to listen to the songs. And he called me and said, "Hey, man, I want to do these songs." And I said, "Which ones?" And he said, "All of them." I was like, "Wait, all of them?" He said, "Yeah." So he said, "How did you record these demos?" I said, "Well, I played all the instruments just to demo the songs." He said, "Well, bring all your instruments up to the studio and we're going to record these songs." And we did. The album was called Voyeur. Came out maybe 79, 80, and did really well. Dave won a Grammy on that album. And that was the beginning of us working together. Not long after that, they decided to do a live album on Dave Sanborn. And rather than call in a producer to produce the album, Pat Raines, Dave's manager at the time, said, "Why don't we just have Marcus do it? He's the youngest guy in the band, but he's the one who has his head on straight and he knows the music well. They've been playing on the road for like 3 years now." So they just kind of threw me in the pool. So, but Pat was right. I did know the music well, and it wasn't that, you know, tough a job. That album was called Straight to the Heart. And that was a really big album for Dave. And from that point on, they would ask me to produce Dave's album. So I don't know if you would call it taking over, but I absolutely was making sure that Dave picked good songs that represented what he could do. I was writing a lot of songs and arranging stuff and just making sure the albums sounded well. So I think from Straight to the Heart was the beginning of my collaboration on that level with Dave.
A lot of people became aware of David Sanborn in the 80s when he regularly sat in with Paul Schaefer on Late Night with David Letterman.
It's going to be very exciting, ladies and gentlemen. We're always, always really very, very happy when our next guest is able to join us on the program. He's been with us on and off over the years for a long time, and we are greatly, greatly appreciative of his efforts here. He is performing a song from his newest CD, of which I have a copy here. In my left hand, it's entitled Up Front. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello once again to David Sanborn. Kids, go ahead and... The last time you're here, I mentioned this to you, but it's just a thrill for us to have you here every Thursday. Well, and you guys always sound terrific.
It's always great to play with us.
Now, you know, when people talk about saxophone, they always say, "Well, David Sanborn, that's it." Who do you like as musicians? Who stands out in other instruments?
Other instruments? You mean contemporary?
Dead guys, dead living guys, whatever you want.
Prince. I like Prince.
Yeah.
And I like the Talking Heads, and I like Branford Marsalis and Wynton Marsalis, and you know.
No slouches in that group.
No.
How long have you been playing the saxophone?
Over
Long
20
time?
Years, over 20 years.
Learned it in high school?
Yeah, when I was 11 years old, I started playing.
Was that your first choice for an instrument?
That was it, yeah. I heard Ray Charles when I was about 11 years old, and I thought that was the greatest, the coolest thing in the world was to be a saxophone player with the Ray Charles band.
Yeah. You must have played with him by now.
No, I've never played with
him. Is that right?
I've never played
with him. That would be a terrific combination.
Yeah, it would be great.
Is the saxophone one of the few instruments now that has never been written into a symphonic piece?
No, it's actually been written, I think Berlioz wrote it in Symphony Fantastique.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you were. I heard you listening to it on your Walkman the other day.
Right. But it's, you answered the question.
Most of the literature is French, kind of, you know, kind of fey, kind of.
When are you guys going to do get together and do some albums and stuff? You
that
and
would be great.
I'll produce it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you helped him the last session, right?
Yeah, that's right. I was in there. We got to go. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Pat Prescott, along with my special guest, Marcus Miller, and this is a tribute to a musical legend, David Sanborn.
Well, certainly one of your proudest moments working together also included another dear friend and collaborator, Bob James, and that project I'm talking about, of course, is Double Vision. And Bob James talked to us a little bit about the experience of doing that album and his relationship with David Sanborn.
My real strong memory of that was going to his apartment in New York and trying to decide what material we were going to record. And he played this demo that he had gotten from his friend Marcus Miller. And on that demo were two songs, one, More Than Friends, fantastic, great song. And then he put on this song, which Marcus called Maputo. And when I first heard it, both Dave and I immediately realized that it was going to be very, very successful. It certainly changed my life after that. It found a very wide audience, and it motivated Dave and I to keep working together. Long-time friendship with Dave, and I will never forget that unique sound that he had. And in addition to that, crazy, wonderful sense of humor.
That's the dream. That became Dave's signature ballad, written by Michael Cimbello. For those of you who don't know Michael Cimbello, he was a Stevie Wonder's guitarist for a while back in the 70s. And he was a studio guitar player in L.A. You know, he played on a lot of different people's records. Then it turned out he was an amazing singer, sounded similar to Stevie Wonder, sang that smash song Maniac for Flashdance. So that's Michael Cimbello, beautiful songwriter, and he wrote that song, The Dream, and David Sanborn just ate that melody up, and people would request that melody so much that he started going, okay, I don't really want to play The Dream tonight, and people would go, yeah, you know, you don't really have a choice anymore, Dave. No, a beautiful song, beautiful melody.
Hi, this is Terry Lynn Carrington, and I wanted to say a few words about David Sanborn, someone that was very important to me to my career and someone that was a friend. David hired me in the late 80s to play in his band and tour Europe. It's such fond memories for me. David saw potential and he hired me, and I don't think I was fully ready, but it really did help propel me into thinking about music differently and making a record that I made shortly after that tour, which then was nominated for a Grammy in Contemporary Jazz. And it was really playing with David and feeling more confident about groove music and R&B in that style of jazz. So I have a lot to be thankful for, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity that he gave me.
You're listening to a celebration of the life and music of David Sanborn on WBGO. Hi, I'm Pat Prescott. Thanks for joining me, along with special guest Marcus Miller.
You know, it was also during this period that Dave did some other things, too, that gave him a chance to spread his wings a little bit creatively. He started working on movie soundtracks. The Lethal Weapon soundtrack came out to great popular acclaim in 1987. And in 88, probably one of the crown jewels of Dave's career, the work that you guys all did together on the incredible TV program Night Music. And those were some great times, Marcus. If you could get invited to that show, which we did on a couple of occasions, man, just to be like a fly on the wall to see the collaborations happen. I know it meant a lot to Dave, didn't it, that show?
Oh, yeah. You know, it was such an adventurous show. I mentioned earlier that Dave and I were in the Saturday Night Live band together early on. And so there was a relationship with Lorne Michael, the creator of Saturday Night Live. And Dave and Pat Raines pitched to Lauren, hey, what about doing a music show that kind of has the flavor of Saturday Night Live, except the music would be dominant as opposed to the comedy? You know, Saturday Night Live always had a musical guest who would do two numbers during the show, but this would be flip-flop, where it's all music. And we had a comedian, Kevin Meaney. He would come on from time to time, and we had a host, Jules Holland. But the thrust of the show, the main appeal of the show was the music, and there was a mission to have musicians from different walks of musical life jam together, create music together, and see what they could come up with. And you know, we had, over those two seasons, Pat, we had Dizzy Gillespie, we had Donald Fagen, Bootsy was on there, the avant-garde saxophonist John Zorn was on there. Of course, David invited his man Hank Crawford to play there. Slim Gaylord was there. The guitarist, the rock guitarist, Jeff Healy, who plays the guitar in his lap. He's a blind guitarist who plays the guitar sitting in his lap, and he's just awesome. And if you ever see the that episode, you can see myself and drummer Omar Hakim just flipping out because we had never heard this guy before. And you can just see us going, wait, who is this guy and what planet does he come from? It was just really a beautiful show. It lasted two seasons, but like Star Trek, the original Star Trek, which also lasted two seasons, this thing has become like a legendary classic series. I was the musical director for the first season, and then I had to leave to start working with Miles on Miles Amanla album. But I came back that second season and brought Miles with me to be the special guest. And that episode is really incredible, to see David Sanborn collaborating with Miles, and Kenny Garrett was on that set too. It's just some incredible moments on the TV series Night Music.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miles Davis.
Thank you. Vega.
I guess if there was a grand purpose to it, it was to show how much musicians have in common, more than that, than they have differences. And to, you know, to kind of illustrate the fact that musicians listen to all different kinds of music. We have Leonard Cohen play with Sonny Rollins, and something that, you know, somebody else may have thought, well, that's not going to work. Well, it worked.
Who shall I say?
Jazz musicians play with rock musicians, put all these people together, and they find a common ground. And there's interesting things come out of those mixes and those experiments.
David's Night Music co-host was Jules Holland, who recently reflected on his time on the show.
What I remember most of all is that David was, first of all, as I've learned, because I have a TV show here now in England, you know, but as I've learned, that he has had a very open and generous spirit when you meet each person. And it made all the difference by relaxing people and realizing that you're not, you know, you're not after anything except the best, how you can best capture what their music is about. And his nature was that he would meet different artists when they'd come on and he would sort of relax them. I remember one time Eddie Palmieri came on, amazing sort of musician, but it was quite a handful what he was playing, I think is the simplest way I'd describe it. And he was like slightly teasing David about, oh, well, you're going to keep up with this because we're playing the Arabic scale here. I mean, there's no such thing, I don't think, but he was just like kind of making it, he was kind of teasing. But anyway, they played in this, I was sitting in the rehearsal room, and they played in this first rehearsal, and it was like amazing what David was playing. He suddenly, it was like you put him on the spot, and it was like a prize fighter who's like, well, you've got to get out of it. I thought, how's he going to get out of this? And he didn't just get out of it. He made it sing. He was fantastic. You know, I play with a lot of the guests who come on my show, but I really learned this from David. You have to be yourself, because whenever David played, you could tell it was him, but he could apply himself to all of these different things, and it just added a beautiful flavor or a beautiful tone or a beautiful decoration to whatever was going on. But he never tried to be that person or playing that, you know, he just tried to be himself engaging with that music, which is quite which is a great lesson for me to see, observing that.
Hi, I'm Pat Prescott, along with my special guest, Marcus Miller. And this is a tribute to a musical legend, David Sanborn.
Yeah, you know, in those late 80s, man, the hits just kept coming for you guys. I think it was 1988 when Close Up was released, another Marcus Miller production. You were really getting to be quite the producer, courtesy of Mr. Sanborn, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, and yeah, he kept me busy, and I enjoyed every minute of it, absolutely. Close Up was a big one for Dave. Dave, you know, this was like really the height of his kind of commercial popularity. Double Vision probably sold like 1.5 million, close to 2 million records. But as David's solo album, Close Up was up there, you know, and he was really, really popular. Talking about the late 80s. You know, what's funny is that after that, after Close Up, Dave said, you know what? There's so many people imitating me now. And I'm kind of locked in this commercial box, I feel. And I want to do something different. And he, the next album, he just kind of completely wiped the slate clean and did an album called Another Hand. And he had me write some stuff that was completely different from what I had been writing for him before. When I was writing for Close Up, it was kind of pop jazz, right? But when we got to Another Hand, I was writing stuff that sounded like a Dave playing Duke Ellington. He also did stuff with Charlie Hayden and I believe Kenny Kirkland played on that. Some really beautiful jazz players that really took the listeners by surprise. He went a totally different direction, surprised a lot of fans, you know, went on the road with an acoustic bass player, Charlie Hayden and Kenny Kirkland. And a lot of fans were like, wait a minute, where are the songs that I know? Where are the songs from the albums that I bought over the last 5-6 years? But it was something that Dave felt he had to do. And, you know, Pat, I didn't get it at the time. You know, he wasn't playing any of his licks. And I said, man, why aren't you playing any of your signature stuff? And he says, man, I just can't. I hear so many people imitating me. And that's when he told me, you know, they get the suds, but they don't get the beer. That's when he gave me that line. But I just need to find something else. And it was a tough period to try to make a David Sanborn album and make sure he remained David Sanborn to people's ears, but try to find something new. So he did Another Hand. I think it was a critical success, but a lot of people were scratching their heads. So what does he do next? What does he do next after Another Hand? Well, he says, let's get back to the basics. Let's listen to some Hank Crawford. Let's listen to some James Brown. Let's listen to that stuff, and then let's create something from there. And that album was called Upfront. And that was a really, for me, one of my favorites, because I saw Dave kind of rise out of this period of reflection, really strong, really still sounding like David Sanborn, but he had added all this extra vocabulary, which he had kind of developed over the couple of years where he was doing Another Hand. So Upfront is one of my favorites.
In 2003, David Sanborn released the album Time Again, this time with producer Stuart Levine at the helm.
In 2002, he came to me, and he hadn't made a record in a few years, and he was kind of burnt out on making the kind of records he had been making. Although they were wonderful and successful, he felt like he needed to say something else. So he asked me again. The first time was in 1977. The second time was 2002. And this time I absolutely was with it, and I accepted his invitation, and we started to go to work, first on the phones, talking over all the possibilities of what he could do. And we created some parameters about what it should be, and I wanted to hear a more gentle side of David, and I wanted to hear more of his compositions. And that's what the first album we did was. It became an opportunity for him to play with some of his favorite musicians in New York. And I won't go into chapter and verse about that record. And I made another one with him in 2004. But I think he was very happy with the way they came out. And I know I was. And once again, I just think he was a giant, man. I think he was a brilliant musician. His sense of curiosity about life in itself followed through on his playing, and he was a completely spontaneous player, that so much so that when producing him, I went only for the guide tracks. I never let him go an overdub, because I felt that his first instinctive playing was the closest to who he was. And he was a perfectionist, so he kept trying to make it better. And if something's right, you can't make it better.
Hey, this is Dave Koz. David was my mentor, my main inspiration on the saxophone, a change agent for the instrument. In other words, he was a bridge from more traditional jazz to what's considered more contemporary or smooth jazz. And he was also one of the kindest, funniest, and most beautiful human beings I ever met. I grew up idolizing him, trying to imitate him, learning all of his songs, wanting to just be like him. But there will only be one David Sanborn. I recall meeting him for the very first time through a friend of a friend of a friend of a cousin of a friend. I wound up backstage at one of his concerts in Los Angeles where I grew up. I think I probably was 17 or 18 and just completely tongue-tied meeting my idol backstage after one of his sold-out concerts at the Universal Amphitheater in Los Angeles. Not knowing what to say, bumbling through it, and finally I got it out. Says, I just want to be like you. I just want to play like you. I want to sound like you. And he was like, stop. I'm here. I'm going to be here for a while. Let me be me and you be you. Find out who you are musically and nurture that. And that was probably the best professional advice I ever got. And it came from my idol. An amazing, amazing experience.
But don't let me be lonely tonight. On
May 12, 2024, we lost a giant of contemporary jazz. And today on WBGO, we celebrate the life and music of David Sanborn. Hi, I'm Pat Prescott. Thanks for joining me, along with special guest Marcus Miller.
You know, I remember when we did one album, he decided before we started the album to take his horn to the saxophone repair guy just to do a checkup, an overhaul, just to look at the sax and make sure there was nothing wrong, even though there was nothing apparently wrong with the horn. But Dave just wanted to make sure. And he brings the horn after having taken it to the shop. He brings it to the studio and he says, man, something's different about my horn. It feels like there's a sock in it. And he plays the horn for me. And it just sounds like regular David Sanborn to me. He says, you don't hear that? And I go, no, man, I'm listening, but I don't hear it. Man, there's a sock in my horn. To make a long story short, 4 months of him freaking out over his horn, taking it to every saxophone repair guy in New York City. Over the holidays, he flew to Tokyo to see if he could get a guy to help him out in Japan, to no avail. Came back to the U.S. He was playing a Selmer saxophone at the time, Yamaha saxophone. Got wind that he was having trouble with his horn. They sent some representatives in business suits with 12 saxophones lined up in a row in the studio for him to try, hoping to get him to move over to Yamaha. It was crazy. And I'm trying to get the album done at the same time. Anyway, you know, when you do an album, once you get the performances, you mix the record and then you master the record. Mastering means it's ready to be put on a CD or an album or whatever the medium's going to be. The day after mastering, he calls me and says, I figured out what it was. The day after I'm done, I said, well, what was it? He said, he changed one of my keys, you know, the keys that you press on the saxophone. He changed one of them from metal to plastic, and that made all the difference. And I'm like, man, Dave, that might be the problem, but I think the problem might be more internal. I don't think it's a coincidence that the day after we're done, all of a sudden everything is fine. Anyway, that's one of my stories. But you guys have gone through something like that because you've worked with him on your program as we speak, and I'm sure he put you guys through more than a little bit.
Well, I tell you what, it was worth all of it. I know our producer Billy Robinson worked with him, and fortunately, he did get a chance to do some of those podcasts before he left us. A great conversation with Sonny Rollins.
Coleman Hawkins was living not far from me. I found out that he usually came home about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I waited there, and here came this big Cadillac driving up. answer me. Mr. Hawkins, can I have your autograph?
We'll also be hearing some new music from David as well, because he had just completed a project shortly before he passed away. Did he speak to you at all about that, about the inspiration?
No. So I'm anxious to hear it.
Before David Sanborn passed away, he completed a brand new album, which he eerily titled The Other Side. We're going to hear a track from it in just a few moments. David was so excited about it, as he told James McBride.
I just did a new record that actually Jonathan Duckett, my engineer, who is also your engineer,
right?
is in the process of mixing, and I really want to send it to you. Because it's in more of a, I hate to use this word, but more of a straight ahead kind of context. Not like, you know, doom, tink, ka-ting, but it's like, it's got more of that conversational aspect in a different context.
As our tribute to David Sanborn comes to a close, as promised, we want to share with you the world premiere of a song from David's forthcoming album. It's a song that he had previously recorded that was written by D'Angelo, called Spanish Joint. But before we hear it, let's hear a few words from David's wife, Alice Sawyer.
Dave has been working on this new album for a little while. He decided of the name The Other Side, a tune he wrote much earlier in the process, which I found really stunning, like a profound intuition. Thanks God, we have been able to record everything before Dave started to feel too weak. So this is a pure Dave's piece of art, and he was really happy to know that it would be exactly as he wanted it to be. He just did not have the time to hear the final mix, and he told me that he would completely trust me to do that. Our brilliant sound engineer Jonathan Duckett and I went through it in the complete spirit of Dave. He was so demanding, and he had such a precise idea of what he wanted. It was obviously heartbreaking to go through the tracks, but I had a mission. And when I started to enter in Dave's album again, to be able to listen the way he would have listened to it as much as possible, imposed me to let go about how broken I feel. Then I found the path to join his sound, his scream, his intensity, his deep lyrical way and unique way to express emotions. Being one with him, he was expressing the inconsolable wound I have, and that's the power of Dave, this voice of transcendence, expressing completely what's so hard to put out of yourself. This album is such a special album and an extraordinary manifestation of Dave's spirit. Spirit of the music he was into at this moment of his life and his gestation for years. He said many times how important this album was for him. And I'm so proud that we can start to share it. And I know he's hearing it from the other side.
I'm Pat Prescott. Thanks to my special guest, Marcus Miller, along with the many artists, friends, and family who reminisced about their times together with the late David Sanborn. This show was produced by Billy Robinson.